We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
We know this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed to the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
All right, so where do you want to start this story? Well, we should start with the ending. I'm sure most of our listeners know that you have just recently sold your company Drip to Lead Pages in Minneapolis. So that's the end of the story.
Yeah, they acquired the whole team, us, the technology. It's exciting. It's a really, there's so much to talk about, but I think the summary is that it was a long process and, you know, parts of it were quite hard, but now that we're here, it is super exciting, and there's cool stuff going on already, even the past 2 weeks since we finalized the deal.
My memory of the beginning of the story was in around 2013, which was shortly after you and Derek completed building and launching Drip. Is that right? Is my timing right?
Yep.
We were on a road trip and we were having just sort of these big dreamy conversations like, we should live in Europe for a year and we should do this and why don't we do that and blah, blah, blah. And I asked, would you ever sell Drip? And you had some financial goals. You were like, I either want to make X amount a year with Drip or I'd like to sell a company for X million dollars. And I wrote that down in 2013. Because that's the kind of thing I do. So I have a simple note document with kind of a list of all of these random things. But one of the things that was listed there was sell Drip or another company for X million dollars or make, you know, a certain amount of money each year. And that number is the number that you sold Drip for, which I sort of love that piece of the story. And oh, the other piece of it was that these goals were to be accomplished by 2020. So by 2020, live in Europe for a year, maybe sell the company, make a certain amount of money with the company, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And we had had conversations like that before. And I think I probably had even mentioned, even before Drip was Drip, and it was kind of like my next company in quotes, you know, whatever the next thing is I do. That's the thing. Like some people will say, I would never sell my company, or I would never raise funding, or I would never do this or never do that. And I don't like that, the dogmatic way of thinking. And so I tend to ask myself, boy, I really am not going into this with the goal of selling. I'm really not going into this with the goal of raising funding, right? I'm not setting out to do it. But we all have a price, or we all have a point at which it makes more sense to do it than to not. And then, you know, phrasing the question is like, under what circumstances would you or should you do this? Under what circumstances would you be foolish not to? It's kind of like framing it like that. And that's kind of where we were headed with that.
So that wasn't the beginning of the selling process, but at least it was in my memory as your wife, like the earliest beginning of this story where the number was kind of identified and your sense of like, hey, maybe this is a potential exit strategy. Either I'm going to grow it really big and successful and awesome, or there might be a scenario in which I would sell it.
Right. And to be honest, we did that. You put it in some simple note doc and then I completely forgot about it. And I didn't refer back to it. I didn't look at it. I didn't think, boy, every month, you know, I got to achieve one of these goals. It just kind of disappeared. And I genuinely focused on growing the business.
Right. It wasn't a goal so much as like a thought that got jotted down on a road trip.
Right. At some random moment in a conversation with Tom Petty playing in the background.
American Girls, man.
I think it's singular.
Okay. Okay, American fine. You are so irritating.
That was awesome. I think American Girls is the collection of dolls, and American Girl is the Tom Petty song. We were not playing with dolls on the road trip, just to clarify.
Okay, so let's get back to this story. So it was about a year ago that you had early conversations with Lead Pages. Is that right?
Yeah. Clay Collins emailed me in June of 2015. The cool part is he took a snapshot of that email and put it in kind of the announcement blog post for Lead Pages, which was neat. And I had remembered it being in July, but it turns out it was like early June. So that's about 13 months ago.
Yeah. And I remember you telling me about it and me being like, huh, okay, kind of interesting. Would you consider that? And you were like, I don't know. Not really that excited about it.
Yeah. And my initial response, because his initial question, it was kind of one sentence. It was like, hey, we really like Drip. Would you be interested in selling it? And I had to think about it a lot. Like, what do I reply here? And I replied, if I recall, I mean, I could search it up, but it was basically like, you know, we're profitable, we're growing. It just doesn't really make sense. It would really need to make sense to move forward. And I don't think it'll work out. You know, I was just kind of like genuinely had some trepidation about even broaching the subject, which in retrospect, I mean, I probably should have just started having the conversation, but I kind of said, nah, I don't think so. And I think it's where it's at the point where that makes sense. And we did wind up having some back and forth emails, but it really just lasted a couple of weeks. And then there was just kind of radio silence. I mean, the conversation just trailed off is really what happened.
There are many reasons to not sell Drip. One is that it's been growing, it's been doing well, it's been profitable, it's been sort of this happy little baby, and you don't want to mess with it. And I know that you also have so much invested in your customers. Many of your customers are your friends. They're people that you've known over the years who've been people who've listened to your podcasts and who've come to MicroConf and, you know, who you have relationships with. So I think at least my memory of the early conversation around the possibility of selling it was like, no, like I want to maintain the ability to take care of your people and to make sure that the quality of your service and the quality of what people are getting when they are working with Rob Walling is really stellar. And you weren't really eager to like sell your customers essentially.
Right. And that wasn't even discussed at this point from their side. And to put this into perspective, I was approached by many potential acquirers who had interest in acquiring Drip. And so this was something that was a reality and something I really had to think about. What are the deal breakers, right? It's like, what are the things I absolutely will not do if I were to even move forward with a conversation about this? And that was one of the big concerns, was for the employees and the customers, because I didn't want people to lose their jobs and didn't want the customers to get any type of anything other than what they're used to from me, right? From my apps and my conference and my book, the stuff that I put out. Like, I have a reputation and a brand, if you will. And like, it just wouldn't be worth doing that for simply to sell a company, you know, to have people come out of it with a bad taste in their mouth. And so that was something I figured out early on. And I wrote it down in my notebook of like, here are things that I absolutely wouldn't do. And one of them was like, sell it and have all the employees, you know, get fired, or sell it and have a company get shut down. And luckily, that was very much in line with specifically what Lead Pages wanted to do. They wanted to keep it and to keep all the employees. They wanted the team to run the company, and they wanted to continue growing the app, meaning we're going to keep building it and investing in it. And that's kind of right in the line with the vision that I wanted to do.
And I think it's helpful that you had thought about it, even as a remote possibility. So you'd even jotted down some things in your notebook. And I think especially after this initial conversation with Clay a year ago, to think about, okay, what would I want it to look like if this were to ever happen? And so as the process has moved forward and unfolded over the course of this year, you've had some clarity about pretty important points that you kind of went into the process knowing they were non-negotiable for you, which I think was helpful. I think that eliminated a lot of like having to rethink and rehash and try to make decisions when some of those decisions in your mind were already made.
Yeah, that's right. And it made it easy in like really early conversations to say, hey, because at the early stages, you're just exploring, right? It's like the guy on the other side of the table says, so, you know, kind of here's what I'm thinking. What do you think? Like, how do you want this to look? And that was it. I mean, it really was just Clay came down for coffee, literally down to Fresno. And we sat at a coffee shop and kind of just it was a very casual conversation. You know, there wasn't negotiation. I mean, this is pre talking about price or anything, but it's just like, do our visions fit? Because if they don't, we really just shouldn't even proceed. And just having sat and thought about what are the deal breakers, what are things I'm really excited about, what are the positives of this? Like, there's the ability to have more resources and grow it faster. And I mean, there's a lot of elements of it. And having that in mind, I was able to communicate that in just a conversational manner right up front. And by the time that ended, I knew, boy, this thing could really have legs. Like, if we can agree on terms, this is actually better for my whole team, including me, and it's better for our customers in the long run. I truly believe that. And I wouldn't have gone forward with it had I not.
All right. So let's move forward a little bit in the timeline. From my memory, your next significant conversation with Clay from Lead Pages was after you guys launched Workflows. Was that January, February?
Yeah. Although there was some conversation in, I think it was November. September, November, where we kind of went back and forth, and it was more, there was someone else on his team who I was talking to, and we were kind of yeah, just having conversations and continuing to feel things out. I think we did start talking about a number at that point and other terms, because you do have to get down to the nitty gritty at some point, right? And start talking about things. And then around the holidays, I think things kind of faded, and I think we hit an impasse at a certain point, and just kind of, again, the conversation faded. And then in late January, we launched Workflows, and it was a really, really cool step up for Drip. It made it on par with like the best marketing automation tools out there. And it kicked our growth into even higher gear. And so there was more momentum and a lot of people talking about us. And we then started revisiting that conversation in, I think it was late January, early February.
But this became much more intense this spring, like late March, April, moving into May.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much from my memory is like February, it started ramping up to where it was taking up more of my kind of mental cycles thinking about it. And then March was even more. And I was trying to keep it to where it, you know, wasn't impacting the day-to-day for me of like running the business or even just kind of operating, because you don't want it burning all your spare cycles. And I was able to do that until probably late March or April, to where it did become pretty much all-encompassing. And it was kind of all I thought about and all these deal points and discussions and such.
I mean, I remember us having a conversation where I said to you, like, this is your job right now. If you're in the midst of considering this kind of acquisition, like, this is the core of what your job is. And like, that was an important shift for you to realize, like, okay, I'm sort of not running the company this week. I am working through the possibilities of this acquisition.
Right. And I had a hard time with that because obviously I want to continue pushing things forward. I'm lucky that my team is so autonomous and they're really good. And I continued to meet with them and get stuff done. But definitely there were weeks here and there where I was pretty sucked into the vortex of thinking about this stuff.
So from my understanding, as somebody who has been sort of on the sidelines, right, I'm not obviously involved in the business or the decisions in any kind of primary way, but to watch you go through this process, it seems like there was this first level of negotiation that was about coming to a set of terms that was reasonable and agreeable to both of you. And then once those terms were agreed to, there was this whole process of finalizing the kind of the finer points and ironing out the details of the deal. So that felt like there were two kind of rounds of negotiation.
Yeah, I mean, I'd even say there were three rounds. You know, the first round was maybe not even negotiation. It was like the first 6 months of conversation where it's really just exploratory. And you're kind of trying to figure out, is this a fit from both sides? And you're really not even talking about too many specifics yet. And it's more casual. And then you're right. Once you start talking about deal specifics, and this price is only one aspect. I mean, there's all other types of things, like what happens with the team and do people have to move and how long do you stay on for? And I'm trying to think of what else, like what are payment terms? Because almost all acquisitions, they're not just, you know, some big lump sum paid up front. They tend to be paid over a certain amount of time. Are there milestones involved where you have to hit either revenue or engineering stuff after? You know, there's on and on and on. And each of these things, you want to get as much of this decided up front as you can. And that's that first round that you're talking about where it's the big... It's the big, hard choices. You're committing to some big things. The standard procedure is you put that all into what's called a letter of intent or an LOI. And that is it's a non-binding contract in essence, which sounds kind of funny, but it's kind of like you both sign on the dotted line and that says, hey, we're going to start due diligence. And due diligence is where it gets really pretty painful. And due diligence typically ranges for like a company acquisition, I'd say between 45 and maybe 90 days or 100 days. And it is where they dig into all the financials and all the stuff in the business. They try to verify, you know, everything you've told them. And that's where you already have the high level terms, but now you're getting into really nitty gritty stuff. You get lawyers involved at that point and all the contracts start getting written up. And that's kind of the second round of, there is definitely still negotiation going on because you're just trying to figure out like, what's the definition of, you know, if there's a non-compete as an example, like what's the definition of the business that you can't compete with? How do we define that in a couple sentences? That kind of stuff. So those were the two rounds. And like I said, due diligence takes about a couple months typically. And the part before that, just to get to the letter of intent and start due diligence can definitely takes months. And I've heard it taking, you know, 5-6 months in some cases.
So one of the big discussion points earlier in the process before due diligence began was whether us moving was going to be on the table as a possibility or something that would be negotiable. And from the beginning, you were a no on that. Like that was something that you didn't want to have to do. And you on paper weren't that interested in moving to Minneapolis. But was something that I was sort of interested in and excited about on a sort of theoretical level, at least. It ended up actually being very, very difficult and hard for me to close my practice and make that transition. But that was something that shifted early on. And I think that made a big difference in the grander scheme of the negotiation and the decision making, is that once you indicated that it might be possible or you might be willing to consider relocating, I think that was really important to lead pages. And it sounds like that was something that really solidified that this is a deal that could really be a partnership or something where the two companies can work together and mesh well.
Yeah, if you think about it, there's a lot of value to having me and any members of the team who want to move, having them at the same location, basically, because Lead Pages is in Minneapolis. And I truly believe the deal could have been done either way. Like, it could have been done without me moving. But, you know, the more I thought about it and the more we all talked about it, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if I was acquiring a team, I would want some leadership with me as well. It's like, whether you think about it as kind of transitioning stuff or whether you think about it as just not trying to do everything remote, I think there's some value. And it's funny, you and I look at things different ways. I tend to think things are going to go wrong and things are going to be harder than they will be. You tend to think things will be easier than they will be. And that's how the move was. Like, the whole concept of the move, I thought, oh my gosh, like, moving, what a disaster, right? Like, sell the house and we got to move states and we got to find schools for the kids and we got to find all the stuff that we've already found, right? We have mechanics and we have doctors and just all the time involved in that. And then you have to shut a practice down, which is going to be a big deal, and blah, blah. And I just see all the details just floating out. And it was just painful for me to think about. And you were like, no, it'll be a fun adventure. Let's do it. To be honest, if you hadn't said that, I don't see that that would have even been on the table, because it's not something that I really wanted to do.
Let's put the moving conversation on hold for a second. And I feel like I want to talk a little bit more about the negotiation phase. And this was a really challenging part of this for me, is you, rightfully so, like, negotiation is really difficult, and you needing to be on guard and kind of on your game all the time and weighing every word and sort of considering all of these points of negotiation and really being so diligent and careful about everything and really not trying to not give up any ground. I know that that level of focus is very difficult. And it also requires you to not be like the super nice, generous guy that you normally are. And even though you're a super nice, generous guy in our family and in our personal life and with our friends, that was not the Rob that was required to sort of handle this process for the business. And that was hard, because I saw, like, this side of you that I just don't like very much. And he was around for like several months, and I'd hear you on the phone and I'd hear you, mean Rob, like, cutthroat Rob.
It went against so much of what I am. And yet, in retrospect, I believe it was the right choice.
Oh, no question. I do too.
I'm very happy with what came out of that, but it was very, very challenging.
I mean, I think you did such a good job. It just sort of sucked.
It's just, if you've ever been in a situation where what is required of you is pretty much the opposite of what you want to do. In fact, you know, when I took the Strengths Finder test years ago, it was like, my strengths are like learning, maximizing, and harmony. And harmony means I like to find agreement. And whether that means, it means I'm really good at compromise. I'm really good at finding harmony between two people that are disagreeing, whether it's me and someone else or two other people. And that means that I don't tend to love being in discord with people. I don't enjoy, you know, telling people no and telling people I can't do this or this doesn't make sense and then having to defend that. And that it really puts me on edge. Even, again, when it is the right thing to do, I think it comes naturally to some people and not as much to others.
Yeah. And again, I fully appreciate that it was the right thing to do. And I think you did so well by yourself and by your team and for your customers. And so this is how it has to be in these kinds of negotiations. But I think that's the toll that it took on us, on your family, is like the grumpiness and the anxiety and you having to work really hard to switch back to your like normal self when you got home in the evening. And I think it's worth maybe talking a little bit about like the amount of anxiety that you carried for months around this. Like, I remember you not sleeping well and not focusing well, being really edgy and irritable kind of about small things, which you know, I know as a professional is a very common sign of somebody who's anxious and who's carrying a lot of stress.
Yeah, it was the most stressful thing I can remember doing in my life for that long of a period. I don't know that I have a good sense of how long the peak. I mean, there was a point where I remember I was like, boy, I'm at peak stress. This is it. If one more thing happens, I'm going to lose it. And keep in mind, at this time, we were in smack in the middle of escrow. We had had our house on the market for 7 months because we were going to move across town within Fresno. So the timing was decent. We were smack within escrow and that was going really poorly. We'd only had one offer. So we really wanted to sell the house. And we were running into all that trouble with the septic tank that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, where it was going to be $40,000 to fix. So I'm out there like digging holes, right, with the water wand. I mean, all this was going on at that same time. What else was going on?
Well, I went to Guatemala in the middle of this.
Oh, that's right.
And all I remember thinking is like, I'm so glad to get on that plane. Like, I need to get away from you.
You left for 10 days. Yep. So then I was driving the kids all over town to all their stuff and trying to keep the house sold. And scheduling movers and packers, right? Because we were going to move out whether the deal went through because we were going to move to the other side of town. So it's like put a move plus selling a house, and that escrow is not going well because of all the stuff you have to replace, plus negotiating the sale of a company or the potential sale of your company. And for a time there, taking care of the kids. I mean, there was a lot going on there. And I remember thinking, boy, I can't do any more things. You know, something has to give here. And as things started to wrap themselves up, I remember, you know, there being kind of a big weight lifted each time.
So when I left for Guatemala, it was still unknown. Like the letter of intent wasn't signed yet. The deal wasn't really solidified. And that happened while I was gone. So I arrived back from Guatemala and then 4 days later got on a plane and flew to Minneapolis and immediately started setting up life there. Like looked at a bunch of houses, rented a house, researched schools, visited schools, sort of did all of the initial research of like, what's this potentially going to look like? Which I started to get really excited about Minneapolis and like excited about all of the theater and the outdoor space and the activities and the quality of the schools and the neighborhood we're living in and the lake that's a block away and our friends that live there and cool restaurants. You know, I just got really excited about it, but then had to go another several months without knowing whether that was indeed going to be the next step for us. So the length of time of unknown, like I came back from Guatemala, rented a house in Minneapolis, came back from Minneapolis, began telling my colleagues and patients, hey, it looks like I may be resigning in a month or two so that they have ample time to plan for what needs to happen. But yet none of this really being finalized and none of it being public. So upending our lives and trying to make plans without knowing for sure if it's going to happen and without really being able to talk about the details of why and what I'm doing and where I'm going.
That was one of the hard parts. I'd say there were a lot of hard parts, but one of the harder parts was that we couldn't tell people. Like, you certainly don't want the news to get out, to spread to customers and even employees. I mean, I hadn't told employees because this type of stuff at any time, it could just not go through, right? I mean, none of this is a sure thing. And so you don't want to start talking about something like this. And that was a challenge. We were making all these changes and making decisions and trying to set stuff up, but we couldn't talk to our friends about it. And frankly, like we couldn't talk about it on this podcast or other podcasts. And so we'd sit down to try to think, all right, what are we going to talk about this week? And it's like, well, this is what's going on. Like this is consuming our lives. And yet we can't discuss that on the podcast. So we have to now kind of find something else that's not nearly as important and talk about it. And that was how it was with some of our friends as well, which was kind of a bummer.
And at one point you just cracked with friends who our kids go to school with. And you all were talking about plans for school for next year and all the great things that are happening. And you reached this point where you said, our kid's probably not going to be at that school next year. And didn't talk about the details, but sort of dropped this bomb on them of like, oh, we might not even be in the state.
Yep. And they were like, why? And it was...
So I think because we are people who have tried to be really connected, and I have lots of professional connections and friend connections. And so not being able to really like let everybody in on this was kind of hard. It made it kind of a lonely process. And I think it maybe made it a little bit more stressful between you and I, because it was sort of all that we were talking about together and we couldn't really talk to very many other people. So it was nice when you were finally able to talk with Derek more openly and finally able to include your coworkers, and then at least you had some other people to talk to.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, Derek was on board the whole time. He and I were talking about it, but it was letting the employees in on it that started making things feel a little better. But we didn't do that till close to the end because I wanted it to be much more of a sure thing. And yeah, I think another part of this that was, I remember being a turn that made it a little harder was once we went to Minneapolis, you were really excited about it. And you kind of can't let that become part of the negotiation, right? If you really want something and you're not willing to walk away, then suddenly you're on the weaker foot. And so I had to separate your excitement from the realities of the conversation.
Yeah, which is a bummer because I think one of the things that's important about making a move like this is being excited together. And I think, you know, this sort of new direction for our family and putting all the pieces in place, that's something that for me is sort of fun or has some pleasure when we are a team and working on it together. And that's happened more recently now that things are public and solidified. But yeah, I felt like I was like, had the sole responsibility of setting up our new life, and you might pull the plug at any time.
Yeah, that was a bummer. I mean, it really was a bummer. And it wasn't me pulling the plug was the problem. You know, it's like,
I know, but that's how it felt.
And I mean, since then, like since everything moved forward, it feels so much better. Like, because now we collectively can be excited about it. And that's been the funnest part for me is like once it closed or once I knew it. I mean, it was about a week or two before close where I was like, this thing's going to go through. Like we're just all on the same page and we're just all trying to make it work now. And even though there were still some points we were discussing, it was just in my head. I was like, this is going to happen. And at that point, then I think I really started changing my conversation. When you and I would talk about it, I stopped using if and started using when in terms of the move and all that stuff. You know, when you said you rented a house in Minneapolis, like you had signed a lease for August. Like you were looking ahead and noticed that leases were getting signed and the good houses were being taken off the market. And so if this didn't happen, we were going to have to break a lease in essence. I'm glad you did that.
Yeah, I'm excited about our new little house.
This episode was so epic and we got into such an in-depth conversation that we've broken it up into two parts. And so this is the conclusion of part one, and we hope you'll join us next week for part two.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.